Hello, I'm Richard Feidler. Thank you for downloading this Conversations podcast. There are plenty more conversations about things you're interested in and things you don't know you're interested in yet. Well, until you try them anyway. Go to abc.net.au/conversations or to iTunes, where you can get lots more for free.
You're listening to Conversations with Richard Feidler. On ABC Local Radio and the World Wide Web.
And now to the Englishman who tested the UK postal system to its outer limits and beyond. Zoe James is with me now. And Zoe's grandfather was a really remarkable and lovely man by the name of W. Reginald Bray. He was born in England in 1879 and he died at the outbreak of the Second World War. Reggie Bray was a champion, good-natured prankster who liked to post things in the mail. And at one point or another, he mailed a bowler hat, seaweed, a rabbit skull, a purse, a slipper, shirt collars, a penny, a turnip. He eventually posted an Irish terrier and then himself, all quite successfully. Over the years, though, Reggie Bray's passion moved into autograph collecting, and not doing anything by halves, he eventually amassed the largest collection in the world. And a man like that, I think, deserves our close scrutiny. And that's why it's lovely to have the granddaughter of the great man living right here in Australia. Zoe James, hello.
Hello, Richard.
I can't tell you what affection I feel for your granddad. And there's a book that was published last year. It's not easy to get hold of. You can get it through the internet, called The Englishman Who Posted Himself and Other Curious Objects by John Dinghy. It's just lovely to read that and see what he is. Was he as lovely as he seemed to be?
Well, I was only one when he died, so I didn't actually know him. But my grandmother and my mother passed down quite a few little tidbits about his funny antics. And
family folklore. He must have lived large in.
There was always this story, of course, of him posting himself, which as a child I thought was hysterical. And I really thought he actually had a stamp on him. But, of course, you just present yourself to the post office and they complete a form and somebody has to escort you to the house, so you don't go in the letterbox.
Well, that's good to know, isn't
it? Is,
although
yes.
Part of me wants to see that happen, though, I must admit. Sorry. He seems to come like from a great British tradition of first of all, there's a streak of eccentricity there, which is great.
Yes.
But there's also
yes.
another thing of holding institutions to account, because he really was testing the post office with
he
all
was,
this, wasn't
yes.
he?
That was the. I think he got hold of the post office manual, and it said you could post anything from as small as a bee to as large as an elephant, and therefore he thought, well, I'll just see if you can do this, and then he used to post letters with rhyme addresses.
Yes, I've got one of those here. I copied it out because I thought it was so lovely. Not only did he mail odd things in the mail, he would also have very strange addresses. He wrote one in verse, and I've just got it here. I'm just going to put my glasses on. This is how one letter of his was addressed. Now, postman, be kind if you will. Deliver this down at Torhill. This is situated in Devon. The post went out about 11. The post office is down in the village, the name of which is Ivy Bridge. The address, I think, I've now told you, except the name is E. Arnold. Actually, I read that wrong, but there you go. Oh, what a lovely thing to do.
I know, and he did that several times. He wrote cards in code of some sort. Some of them never got there and were returned, and he had to pay a penny, of course, to have it returned. But he also used to just send a photo of the person. He did. I think his cousin was a dentist, and he just had a photo of the cousin and dentist and London SW something, and that was it.
Find this
and
man.
And it got there.
And
yes.
it got there.
And it got
right.
there, yes.
You said there it started with him looking at the post office guide. It said you could post something as small as a bee and as large as an elephant. Wow, what a great claim to
he
make.
He didn't try the elephant, though. No.
So he started to experiment sending ordinary and quite strange things. And a turnip. Do you know, how on earth did he get the address on the turnip?
The turnip. You know? Well, we've actually got a photo of him outside the Irish post office where he dug the turnip up and scraped off part of it.
It was a turnip from the post office, was it?
It was dug up outside the post office. And on the back of this photo, there's a dollop of mud.
So what did he write the address on?
On the turnip.
On the turnip.
Yes,
well, he carved it into it.
He carved it into it and stuck a stamp on the other side, and it got there too. So
most of the things he sent were without any form of protective wrapping.
No,
then.
That was the idea. Yes, you just pop them in. I think he had a cigar and all sorts of funny. A frying pan.
A frying pan.
which I think he had on his wall, so I read somewhere afterwards. But
I also love the fact that his mother, who is your great grandmother, I suppose, crocheted a postcard for him.
Yes,
how did
yes.
that work?
That was beautiful. It looked lovely. She was very talented. I've actually got a beautiful tapestry of hers on my wall, a huge one. She was very talented with her hands and needle. And, yes, she had done this. And John Tingey actually purchased it on eBay just recently. He was ecstatic when he found somebody had it.
Yeah. How was the address fixed to the...
It was Crochet. Or...
the name thing, was crocheted on
it. It was crocheted, yes, just, I don't know how she did it. She, very clever.
Very clever, indeed.
Yes.
And it arrived?
And it just had a border that she'd crocheted around, yes. And it arrived, yes.
He sent a bowler hat and a bike pump.
Yes, and various...
Shirt cuffs.
Shirt cuffs stitched together.
Seaweed. How on earth did he send seaweed?
Seaweed was stuck on a piece of paper. He was at Clacton, I think, and decided to do that. Yeah.
Who would he mail these curious objects to?
Mostly to this friend called Arnold.
E. Arnold?
Yes, E. Edward Arnold. And I have no idea who he is. We're trying to work out from some of the photos that I've got if that is him, because he pops up this one face a lot, but would love to know if one of the relatives ever comes forward to who this man is.
We're looking for Mr. E. Arnold.
E. Arnold.
Well, do you know whereabouts he lived? In
Forest Hill.
Forest Hill in London, yes. Somewhere. Well, we'd love to hear from him if anyone has any information about his descendants of his,
yes,
information about him. Your grandfather sent a rabbit skull through the
mail.
Right. Well, how bizarre. It's slightly macabre,
too. It is,
too.
Isn't it? Don't know why he did that one.
Did he write the address on the jawbone?
On the jawbone, yes.
And that got that arrived as well?
Yes, yes.
And a purse. He even sent a money purse?
Just a money purse, yes.
How did he do that? How
did
that work?
He put the address inside with the stamp and just dropped it in the letterbox and hoped a curious postman would
greedy
open
one.
It. And he did, and sent it to the correct address.
Now, he posted his dog. There's no other way of putting it, is there, Zoe? I'll just quote him here, because he wrote this, because he became quite famous in his time in his area, didn't your grandfather?
Oh, yes, in that era.
In that
definitely.
Era. I'm quoting Reggie Bray here, and he wrote, "Now, should you one day take a stroll through the park with a smart little terrier at your heels, and should you suddenly wish to send him home, what are you to do? Well, the answer is simple. Why, take him to the post office, of course. After handing the address and paying a small fee, you leave him and make your call. And when you return there, you will find him waiting on the mat to greet you as lively as a cricket after his passing through the post." How was the dog passed through the mail? How did that happen?
Well, again, you just approach the post office with the dog, but it had to be on the lead. And they just took it and on the lead and delivered it to
you handed the lead to the postie,
and the messenger boy or whoever they entrusted the dog to had to deliver it.
Did anyone ever say, pull the other one,
I think,
or send him home?
I think they said a few times, no, that you can't do that, but he then produced the post office manual and showed them sections such and such and said, oh, yes, you can. And persisted, and they had to do it, yes. Because he also, twice I think, he has arrived at a town to visit someone, and it was foggy, and he didn't know exactly where he was. He lost his bearings, so he was near a post office and got them to escort him to his friend's house.
That's how he started to post himself.
No, I don't think that's how he started. I'm not sure how he actually... I think the first one was not foggy.
It wasn't foggy, okay.
The first one was 1900 and it wasn't foggy, no.
Tell me how what you know of how that unfolded when he decided to post himself, Zoe. What did he do? Did he do the same thing with his terrier? He just rocked up?
Yes, just rocked up and insisted that he had to be posted. And it was a bit much to their consternation. They found that he was quite right, that the rules actually didn't say that you couldn't. And it was sixpence a mile. And if they had to carry any extra baggage, it was another tuppence. Yes.
This was all done in the spirit of a good-natured prank, but there was a kind of a method behind it, wasn't there? He said something really, really lovely, if I can find the quote in just a moment, about his intent when it came to actually conducting these pranks, which was really in a good-natured way to actually just test the efficacy of the post office.
Yes, it was just, I think he was just in every way testing every rule and regulation and just seeing how he got on.
What was his job? What did he do?
He was an accountant.
He was an accountant.
I know.
Was he quite a respectable man?
It seems like it. On the outside, not on the inside. Yes.
It's a great thing to... I mean, Australia's got a great history of pranks that have gone off, whether it's Barry Humphries as a young student.
Yes.
Dressing as a homeless wino walking the streets of Melbourne and then reaching into a public garbage bin and pulling out a full roast chicken and a bottle of champagne for his dinner. Or someone who conducted a hoax with the 1956 Olympic torch relay, who arrived ahead of the real torch relay at the Sydney Town Hall with a chair leg with some Y-fronts doused in petrol flaming on top of this chair leg and handed that to the Lord Mayor of Sydney. We love a good prank. Oh, yes. Oh, that's a great story, that is. I certainly love a good prank story as well.
Yes.
So he wasn't so much eccentric, really, as just a man with a fine sense of humour.
Yes, definitely. He must have had a great sense of humour. The whole family did, and my grandmother was absolutely the most fun person. I used to spend a lot of my holidays with her, and I just loved going to stay with her.
Now, her name was Mabel, wasn't
it? Mabel, yes.
Tell me a bit about her, about what was fun about her and staying with her.
She was just always laughing and telling jokes and took me to the theatre and things that, when I was very young, which, you know, your parents don't have time to do they? But she lived with her two, after my grandfather died, she lived with her two maiden aunts, sisters, I beg your pardon, my great aunts. And that was when I got this feeling later, because she never spoke a lot about Reg when I was there. And when I put two and two together after collecting a lot of this information after my mother died, that my great aunt Daisy had a dance card with Reggie's name on it very many times.
Hello.
Hello, what's going on here? And especially when it was the last dance. And then Nellie, the other one, had kept all these cards he'd sent her and various little...
He was on with all three sisters.
I think he was. And eventually he settled on the middle one, which was my grandma.
But the other one still had a full dance card.
With his name on it.
Oh, that's lovely. So he was quite a dapper man, wasn't he?
I would say so. He had quite a reputation with the ladies, I think. And I've got an ode that was written to Great Aunt Daisy by one of his cycling friends, and it refers to Reggie as being lovelorn. And they were always going to the pub and drinking and... I think they were pretty wild in their youth.
My guest in conversation is Zoe James, and Zoe is here because her granddad was the legendary man who posted himself, and that's the title of the book about the man whose name was W. Reginald Bray, who was known as Reggie Bray for short, wasn't he?
Yes.
A man who born in the late Victorian era and then died just at the outbreak of the Second World War. When you were one. But the source of great family folklore. You mentioned his love of sending postcards to intriguing addresses. He would often draw interesting diagrams on, yes, on postcards and the like. The most poetic one, I think, he sent is the one that's published in the book about him, which has got a picture of this rock, a gigantic rock, sort of this tower of a rock, somewhere off the coast of the Orkney Islands, and it was addressed to a resident nearest this rock.
Yes. I don't think it found anybody. And the one I think they thought it was, but it wasn't, so...
Didn't he send a postcard to a vacant cave as well?
Yes, he did. Yes. I don't know what happened to that one. But I think they all got returned and he got charged a penny again. Yeah.
Insufficient address,
but
was it?
Yeah. He must have spent hours concocting all these postcards. And, of course, then when he got on to the autograph side, he sent out thousands.
Now, tell me a bit about that side of his character, because he moved from sending prank letters and prank things through the mail to autographing in a massive way, to the point where he amassed the largest collection of autographs in the world. How did he do it? How did he collect the autographs?
Always by mail, and he had a postcard printed, and he asked for them to sign the reverse of the postcard and return it to him. And most times he got replies, and then sometimes he didn't, which Adolf Hitler was one which he tried persistently, but he never got his.
He got a knockback from Hitler, didn't
and
he?
And Mussolini, and the King, and all the royal family in England, which he tried constantly.
Was there a polite refusal, I wonder?
Oh, very polite, yes. Yes, very polite.
The Führer is too busy invading Poland and doesn't have time to sign your request for an autograph.
And George Bernard Shaw was another one who told him he was, it was not sportsmanlike to request a signature this way.
And why?
Oh, because he could forge it or something, and if he, I sign things all day long, and so you can get them, try and tax yourself and get them the usual way.
Did he sign this letter, though?
No, he got his secretary to write it.
Oh, what a tedious man to say that.
So
how unfriendly.
You would have thought, yes, George Bernard Shaw would have been nicer than that.
I would have thought so too, Zoe, just quietly. Yeah. Who else did he get? He got stars from the stage, film and from radio too, didn't he?
Yes, yes. A lot of them. I've got quite a few from the 20s and 30s.
Charlie Chaplin?
Charlie Chaplin. And
Laurence Olivier, I've got
Laurence Olivier,
yes.
Yeah, and Gary Cooper, and then there's a lot of the sports people. He had a lot of the cricketers, and
W.G. Grace.
W.G. Grace, that was my favourite, and that was one that my mother gave me and Anna Pavlova's, as I always wanted to be a ballet dancer, but. Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
But you got Pavlova's signature.
But I got her signature, yes.
Now, George Bernard Shaw gave him the knockback, so did Hitler and Mussolini. That doesn't put George Bernard Shaw in very good company, just quietly. But the Pope said yes.
Yes.
The Pope said yes at the time.
But he I think Reggie had found out that if you put the request in two envelopes, the secretary was only obliged to open the first one and then had to present the second one to the Pope, and he very kindly signed it. So that was
cop that, George Bernard Shaw.
Yes
cop that. So he was only 60 when he died.
Yes very sad.
And by the time he died, his collection was massive. It's amazing. How did he ever have time to go to work?
That's what I wondered sometimes.
So once he died, what happened to the collection?
Well, my mother, my grandmother had it, and after she moved from their house in Croydon, she moved to with the great aunts, her sisters, and then latterly she came to live with us. We had most of the collection all that time up in our loft in Surrey. And
did you know it was there?
In Sanderstead.
Did you know it was there?
Oh, yes, I knew it was there. It was very hard to get up there, and occasionally we were allowed to have a look at one, but as they were so well wrapped, but it was quite intriguing. I mean, a lot of the people, we didn't know who they were, because he used to even get autographs from people who were, something happened in the news that was noteworthy at the time, and then they faded out of popularity, but he always requested their autographs as well. Yeah.
So did your grandmother then, or your mum, sell the collection?
My mother sold the collection, yes. Yeah. She'd been pestered for years by another collector. And I think I was probably about 15, 16. I can't really remember, and I wish I could remember the name of the man who she sold them to as well. But I think she must have thought, as they were just sitting up there gathering dust, why not sell them? And what a shame.
Yeah, I suppose he must have been a legend amongst the world of stamp collectors, high-octane philatelists.
I think so, yes, definitely.
So how did you then come to be the keeper of what remained of the collection?
My father died in 96, and I went over to England and to try and pack up and found a few things. And then I got my mother back to Australia, and eventually. But I had a lot of the autographs and a couple of scrapbooks. And then my son happened to Google one day Reggie's name, and up came a web page of the Sydenham Historical Society with a little section on him, and he said, "Mum, you should do this," and so I did eventually. And then it said, "Contact Reg," no, not Reg, Steve Grinley, which I did. Got an email back immediately from him and a John Tingey, who was starting his own collection, and from then on, I was scanning absolutely everything that I possessed to John Tingey, who was an avid collector and absolutely intrigued with what my grandfather had been doing.
Now, yeah. John Tingey went on to publish a book about your grandfather, and it's a beautifully published thing. It's actually quite a fine book with all the pictures of such as he has.
Yeah, he's done a great job.
It was published last year, and it's quite hard to get hold of, isn't it?
But it is.
You can get
it
on the internet or something.
On the internet, yeah.
It's called The Englishman Who Posted Himself and Other Curious Objects, and it's got a picture of your grandfather on the front from the Victorian era, a beautifully dressed man.
Very nice.
And quite
very
handsome
dapper.
As well.
Yes, yes. He ended up rather large, but I think that was the beer.
Oh, well, that's it. A bit harder to get him through the mail then. The postage probably would have been a lot higher at that point, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So that's how you found out there was all this interest in your grandfather all of a sudden. You
yes,
must have been amazed.
I was, and I'm so delighted because it would have just died otherwise, yeah.
And once you got in contact with John Tingey, who was putting together this book, he must have thought all these Christmases had come at once.
Oh, I think he was delighted, yes, yeah. And we were over in three years ago and actually met him. He invited us for our Sunday lunch, which was lovely. Yeah, so saw all the things he's collected. So he goes to all these philatelic fairs to see what's available.
And now, what do you think of your? I suppose it's a real sadness you never really got to know your granddad.
Oh, it is. Yes, I'd love to have known him. He must have been great fun.
He was not shy of publicity in his own time.
No, because I've got a whole scrapbook full of newspaper columns that he's cut out and collected. Yeah.
There was even a series of cigarette cards or cigar cards.
The cigarette cards, yes.
And he's in one of them, isn't he?
He's on one of them. He was on In Town Tonight, which was a BBC radio program which had celebrities, probably similar to yours, and he's got a whole collection of all the people that were on that week, all signed, plus we had a lot of the blank cigarette cards, which I used to be allowed to swap at school. This is primary school, and to brag about, my grandfather was the autograph king.
I think it's for the man who posted so many things through the mail that I'm going to revere about him the most.
Yes.
He's a fine and great English eccentric and prankster of the very highest order. There doesn't seem to be a skerrick of mean-spiritedness in anything he did. He wasn't there really trying to make life miserable at all.
No, I think he often apologised if he was upsetting the post office, but he just wanted to do things to make sure that the system worked.
Indeed he did, and he even apologised. I think he said if anyone from the post office casts their eye upon the lines that I'm writing now, please accept that I did not do this out of mean-spirited, but simply just to test the postal system and to save it from some of the unfair accusations that had been levelled at it over the years. Great to meet you, Zoe. I'm so glad you came in to talk about this remarkable man that we ought to remember with the greatest affection. The book that was written about him, like I said, it's not easy to get hold of, but it's available, I'm sure, in various places on the internet. It's called The Englishman Who Posted Himself and Other Curious Objects by John Tingey, T-I-N-G-E-Y. Zoe, lovely to meet you, and thanks to your husband for dobbing you in and getting you on the program.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast of Conversations with Richard Feidler. For more information and interviews, visit abc.net.au/conversations.